Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com. Everything you're about to hear is really going on in real time. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Brother, good morning.
Good morning. I just tweeted, welcome to now. The President of the United States of America is in open conflict with the nation's intelligence agencies and tossing around casual references to his critics as embodying or being extensions of or being something like Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it's a little contentious, I have to say.
I would tell you, I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, this is just surreal stuff.
And then you juxtapose that with the love-in in Chicago. You know, any hatred lingering from 1968 in Chicago was gone last night. It was one of the greatest kumbaya moments ever.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very relevant, very relevant thing. Because what you saw with the Obama farewell address was the conclusion of a presidency where people, you know, are basically asked to make an assessment, right? And they do so not in the absence of comparisons, not without perspective. You do so, obviously, looking at the circumstance you're in. So here's Barack Obama getting up there to speak literally as people are looking at their phones and seeing unimaginable reports about the president-elect, who has an approval rating of something like 37% or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, you can't help but make the comparison. Guy's finishing 8 years, no personal scandals, his family looks fantastic. One daughter skips the event because she's studying hard at school, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, you know, neither of us would have would have been studying for that exam.
Level of honor and decency and sort of what you want in a president that was on display there. He literally kind of sheds a tear when he's talking about his wife, and it's very sincere. And then he's like, his unimaginable, you know, warm relationship with Joe Biden, an incredibly moving moment, you know, where they didn't just gain a vice president, gained a brother or something, you know. I mean,
right. You know, with the exception of Jimmy Carter, my entire life, the culture in this country and the mantra from Republicans and a lot of people that live in the heartland of the country has been that the Democrats are not the family values party. They're not the party of traditional sort of middle America, that they play fast and loose and sex and, you know, debauchery. And this president, because of Fox, they have beaten it into people's heads that he somehow didn't have Western traditional values when it came to governing. And of course, that was always a bunch of crap. But that's been pounded into the psyche of the country over and over as a political tactic. And I want you to think about the way the Obamas comported themselves in the White House and the way he conducted his presidency, juxtaposed to what's going on with Donald Trump now. it's astounding.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the juxtaposition is incredibly powerful. I think Barack Obama knew what he was doing last night. He is a skilled political figure. I think he knew that delivering this speech in the context that she did, which, you know, really drove home, you know, some very small D democratic values and ideals. He talked about American democracy. That was a big deal. But he also, he did his farewell address outside of Washington to a big crowd of people, right? That's very, very different than how presidents have always done in the past. And to be quite honest with you, I'm not sure it's the most effective way. I think there is an argument for sitting in the White House and looking straight at the camera and speaking to the American people, as Eisenhower did and others. But whether, you know, we can parse, you know, what works, what doesn't, what's effective, what isn't, in some ways. But the pure symbolism of it, the pure symbolism of, you know, a president at the end of his tenure who is confident enough to go in front of tens of thousands of people and deliver the accounting of his tenure, in this incredibly moving and warm, and I think generally very positive circumstance, that's pretty good. We've had quite a few presidents straggle out of office, you know, barely able to hold their heads up.
Right. And both of us have some pretty significant policy differences with this president, and I think there's some unfinished business and there's some things that he let us down on. But that said, that was a pretty remarkable moment. And obviously, the other thing that's rare is that he actually had a good relationship with his vice president. That is not something that happens frequently anymore. I think probably not since Carter and Mondale have we had a close relationship between two people.
And, well, I mean, at times I think you've had some elements of it, but this incredibly human relationship, too. It wasn't just a working relationship. And also that so many of the staffers, the aides, the allies, the friends all flew in. They were all there. I mean, there was this sense of community and connection. You know, he was belittled at the start of his presidency for being a community organizer, having been a community organizer. He closed it off as a community organizer in the very best of ways. He brought all kinds of people together in a huge setting. He made them all feel very, very special, very connected to something. And then he gave them a charge for the future. And what is amazing, I will tell you this from covering this for years, the most important characteristic of a community organizer is optimism, the faith that you can do something. Some people criticized him for being too optimistic last night. I disagree. I think he did it exactly right. He gave a optimistic, hopeful speech about the future, and he charged not just the people in that room, but tens of millions of people to go forward and make a better future. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable thing. It's a pretty big deal.
John Nichols from the Capital Times with us at SlysOffice.com. All right, you called me yesterday afternoon and broke the news about what was happening and what's transpired. What do we know so far, John?
About Donald Trump?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's a big question what we know. But we do know what has surfaced on the eve of his first press conference in months. What has surfaced initially in the intelligence hearing that occurred yesterday afternoon with some of the questioning by Democratic senators of intelligence agency folks, but then with a big CNN breaking news story as well as some things that were posted on BuzzFeed and some other internet news sites, is that there has been a report floating around that was apparently given to Donald Trump and to Barack Obama suggesting that there are deep concerns about Donald Trump having incredibly extensive relationships, ties to Russia, which go far beyond what people had understood, and which involve all sorts of deep concerns about business ties, about personal ties, and at least creates a suggestion. Again, lots of questions about, you know, where this is coming from, how much you confirm, creates a suggestion that in the formation of a relationship with the Russians, Donald Trump agreed, or Trump's allies, his team agreed, to make policy decisions that the Russians wanted that are perhaps antithetical to U.S. policy. I mean, that in itself is a pretty big deal. And then when you throw on the allegations of personal misconduct that reach pretty much epic level, I mean, sort of like more than you'd read in a John Le Carré novel.
Well,
it,
you know, the,
it's quite something.
The story is true, the most obviously there's lurid details about the Russians intelligence service basically setting him up. He had no idea if the story's true. He had no idea these hookers that were hired to deface this bed that Barack and Michelle Obama had slept in at the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow. I think the most astounding thing is he has such personal animus for Barack Obama that he would do something so contemptible.
Well, we don't. I mean, again,
we don't know. But, you know, Malcolm Nance last night on Brian Williams' show said, you know, when stuff reaches this level and it goes to the president, this isn't just a bunch of loose stuff that was flying around Washington, D.C. They had some pretty credible evidence in order to put that in that addendum.
Oh, they referenced multiple sources. Yeah. And now, and again, with all the skepticism that one might bring and should bring to anything like this, I found two things very interesting. First off, as this incredibly salacious stuff came out, you didn't hear a lot of people stepping up saying, come on, that doesn't sound like Donald Trump, does it? You didn't hear that. But number two, you say contempt for Barack Obama. If indeed this is true, I don't think it's contempt for Barack Obama. I think it's contempt for the presidency itself. And I think this is a big deal. What these charges suggest and what, you know, Trump has denied and pushed back on and called fake news. I mean, boy, if elements of this are true, what you get is a suggestion that Donald Trump came to the decision to run for the presidency of the United States and acted upon that decision based on a profound, overwhelming, deeply troubled sense of what the presidency of the United States is, what its responsibilities are, how you relate to the office, how you relate to who is in the transitory moment holding the office, but much more significantly, how you understand its duties, its role, its essence. And, I mean, you realize, Sly, you don't have to have the salacious stuff to get to a point of somebody betraying the trust at some fundamental level, if even small elements of this are true. This is a big deal. This is huge. And so, again,
how does this go away? Well, how do you brush this stuff aside?
I asked yesterday, I was talking to some interview, and I said, well, how do you tweet yourself out of this one, right? Well, Trump's reaction was to say fake news. Today he had a tweet in which he referenced Nazi Germany. Said, is this not, you know, how do the intelligence agencies let this happen, basically? You know, are we living in Nazi Germany? And, you know, so it's sort of this wild tossing everything he had on it. But it's intriguing that, and he's got this press conference today, which we'll learn more about, but it's sort of this intriguing, basically trying to discredit the revelation, maybe the sources, but not saying, you know, I would never do that, right? Not saying this is just completely false. It never happened, blah blah blah. And so he may go to that, and I expect he will ultimately need to say that. But the next stage of this, obviously, will be a incredibly aggressive investigation of the details that are within this report that's floated around. And some of it may be discredited. I have no doubt of that. You know, it's very possible. But, you know, if any of these I's are dotted, T's are crossed, if this thing comes together, that he was traveling to Moscow and St. Petersburg on a regular basis, that he was engaging in the development of business relations with the Russians several years before running for the presidency, that there might have been discussions about what a presidential run might involve, not necessarily with him, but with members of his quote-unquote team, that there might have been discussions of what policies might be like if you're elected president of the United States or if your candidate is elected president of the United States. You understand, as you start to fill in the blanks on this or answer the questions that this raises, whoa, you know what I mean? You this is multi-year stuff. You know, it's stuff that has potential for revelation upon revelation upon revelation. And again, if some element of it is true, right, then that'd be the whole thing. And I am very cautious about this and very skeptical on some elements of it. But if elements of this are true, it's not about how does this go away. It's just how do you conduct a presidency? I mean, there are Republicans, right? In fact, actually quite a few Republicans who I think do put principle ahead of party. And while there may be Democrats who simply want to stop Trump at any turn, and I understand that, boy, if much of this is true, you have a circumstance where there ought to be sufficient number of Democrats and Republicans to say, this can't go on. You know, this presidency, you know, it has gone to places that are unacceptable. Now, I don't know that we'll get there. But if the questions are answered in the way that is negative for Trump, if the blanks are filled in, if the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, as is suggested, I find it very hard to imagine how you pursue a presidency under that cloud.
Well, it's what's making this difficult for him is, unfortunately, this what has transpired here over the last 24 hours is kind of a plausible explanation for his behavior towards Vladimir Putin over the last year and a half.
Well, of course, you know, and the most dangerous thing for any politician is always that you live up to your stereotype, right? That you appear to be what people think you are or what people have suggested you might be. And, of course, that's huge. I mean, that gets to the heart of the matter. We do not know. We absolutely do not know all the details. This is a 37-page report, which suggests a lot of really bad stuff. What we do know, or at least what we're told, is that this information circulated for a while, that it got to some key people, and that those key people then transferred it or, you know, handed it over to the intelligence agencies. And we are told that those agencies then shared this information with Donald Trump and with President Obama. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, right there, they took it seriously enough to put it in the next, move it up the ladder. And you do understand, Sly, if you're heads of intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies, and you go to the President of the United States and the President-elect of the United States with pieces of paper that suggest incredibly nefarious, potentially illegal, discrediting, crude, awful behaviors, right? You put that on the desk in front of this person. You are either ending your tenure, right? You know, you're basically suggesting you ought not be at the head of an intelligence agency. Or you are setting up a circumstance that could end the tenure of the person you're addressing. Because, I mean, how do you get a middle ground here? How do you put this stuff forward? Say, yeah, we find this credible enough to put on the table in front of the president-elect, if it's completely discredited.
This is the type of stuff you hear about going on in third world countries.
Not many anymore. Not very often. It's a lot of global governance and oversight now that makes this far less likely. No, this is the kind of stuff that you read about in novels. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's a state rep here in Wisconsin about this all. And he knows I'm a writer and stuff like that. And he said, you know, if you walk this into a publisher and say, you know, I want to write a novel where I imagine this stuff, and you just literally you use that 37 pages as the outline, right? They would say, that's been done. That's sort of the kind of cloak and dagger stuff of the 1930s, right? You know, bugged hotel rooms and, you know, like sort of megalomaniacal billionaires cutting deals with foreign governments and, you know, all this kind of scandal. They wouldn't take it seriously. They would say, well, this just can't happen. It's too absurd. And, in fact, that may be Trump's best defense. Seriously. I mean, is there really a global billionaire or businessman who doesn't know that hotel rooms in Moscow are bugged?
I'm guessing that we may have found the one who didn't.
I mean, I'm telling you, if that's the case, and they've got tape. I mean, you know, this is beyond comprehension. And I had somebody say to me last night, you know, when some of this was coming out, they said, oh, well, yeah, but then they've got tape of Barack Obama in that room as well. Wrong. Excuse me? You don't think that the U.S. government and its the Secret Service and CIA and other folks don't recognize these threats and respond to them technologically? Well, when the president travels.
By the way, this is what makes the Saturday Night Live skit all the funnier when the character playing Vladimir Putin gives Donald Trump the elf on a shelf and said, put it next to your router.
I know. Well, it is. But you understand what I'm saying is we have intelligence agencies, security agencies, policing groupings that oversee this stuff, right? That this is something that they prepare for when a president of the United States travels, when the Secretary of State travels, when anybody travels. It's how you make sure that the details, the secrets, the information of our government doesn't fall into the hands, you know, through just casual conversation of another government, right? We know that. We know that to be the case. And that's why this all becomes so difficult to fathom, because we presume that just as members of governments know this, that very powerful business leaders know this, because, you know, business espionage, sabotage is an incredibly big reality. And so ultimately, that's why at every turn here, I have tried to infuse some skepticism and at least some questions about this, because it truly is unimaginable. I mean, if indeed any of this happened, right? You know, if 10% of what is suggested there happened, this is a crisis, right? It's an unimaginable challenge that our country is going to have to wrestle with.
Now, according to Newsweek this morning, they also bugged Hillary Clinton's hotel room, and it was boring.
I'm sure of that.
The only thing they had is that she was contradicting her public positions with private statements. Well, that certainly isn't news to anybody.
Well, I think the WikiLeaks, the DNC emails, right?
Right.
And many of these other emails from Podesta and other people, which, you know, I mean, are sort of tied to all this, at least in peripherally and maybe more, depending on how you assess who's doing what, when, where, and how. And also, depending on what you believe about what is said about WikiLeaks. But certainly those WikiLeaks files and emails suggested contradictions. But with all due respect on contradictions in our politics, how many politicians do you know that say exactly the same thing in public as private?
Let me ask you about what's going to be going on with these nominees now. I mean, what's going to happen with Rex Tillerson?
Well, you know, he's in his hearing today as we speak, and we're speaking on Wednesday. He opened his hearing quite capably, I thought, with a relative amount of nuance, and he's taking some tough questions. There's no question of that. It's interesting that the timing of this thing is very, very, very weird, okay, by any measure. I mean, remember, Congress certified Trump's election on Friday, right, with the acceptance of the electoral votes. So this is now, this all starts floating around on Tuesday afterwards. It's at a point where Trump is, you know, on the fast track to become president. There's not a intervention now that comes. And so he will need a cabinet. He'll be sworn in as president on January 20th, presumably. He's going to need a cabinet. I think that the congressional hearings continue. They do not have to be completed before January 20th by any measure. They won't be. And I think this probably slows the process down. I also think it may, it sort of shakes the whole thing up. It puts an elephant in the room, and it may require further testimony, further assessment. I'll give you a good example of what I mean. Late Tuesday at the Sessions hearing, Sessions was asked by Al Franken, who frankly did the best job of any of the questioners. Sessions was asked about some of this. Not, it was kind of a peripheral discussion rather than getting to some of the deepest elements of it, but it was raised. But it certainly wasn't the full discussion. And Sessions himself seemed to be shocked, right? Or seemed to really be taken aback by some of the questioning. I do think that it is appropriate that he might be invited to come again and testify more thoroughly about how a U.S. Attorney General might interact with and deal with issues, the issues that might arise from this. With Tillerson, it's a similar thing because, of course, you know, he has such close ties to Russia. He is being asked questions about this today, and some others will be as well. But, you know, again, Sly, so much of this is speculative. There's an acknowledgement that we know something, but we don't know a lot, a real lot of other stuff. And so as regards cabinet members who may somehow have, this may be relevant to a Secretary of State, an Attorney General, others, I know this will sound very political, because certainly many critics of Donald Trump have asked for delays on some of this. I think it's a really strong argument for slowing some things down.
You think? You know?
Yeah, because I think that there's so much on the table right now, and Trump doing his press conference today, making explanations and things, that you know you really need to kind of get a clear picture of what's going on and then take the next step. Trump may come out of this, right? He may have his explanations. Maybe this is fully discredited in a couple of days, that there's just proof. No, he wasn't there. He never traveled there at that time. This never happened. You know what I mean? Okay. Then full steam ahead, right? You know, I mean, you put this aside as something that a lot of people have been discredited for having brought this forward. On the other hand, if he can't deal with it, then he begins his presidency under such an incredible shadow that I think it colors almost everything.
Indeed.
And I think it's very damaging, frankly, to the Republican Party in this sense. Republicans will be forced not merely to govern, but to make decisions about how they will relate to the head of the government, who is of their party. And I think on a regular basis, we think of Republican members coming home to their districts or senators coming home to their states. You know, if the first question is, you know, do you think Trump should be president? And it's coming not from Democrats or from media folks or whatever, or from, you know, your political types, but from ordinary folks. That alters
right.
a lot of equations.
Well, when you're sitting at, you know, if he takes another hit in this and he's down into the 20s in approval rating, if he gets into the Chris Christie range, their loyalty to him isn't going to last very long because they have no track record or relationship with this man. This man took over their party.
Well, there is some of that. And look, I will tell you this. I've written books about presidential accountability, about how Congress holds the executive to account. I've looked at the history of this a lot. I wish I could tell you that it's always an honorable endeavor where the Congress holds the president to account, you know, and it's separate from everything else. It's just the reality of the circumstance. That's not how it works, Sly. The fact is, presidents are often held to account when their popularity dips, when the economy goes bad, when all sorts of other factors come into play, and then suddenly you're like, oh, well, and this guy's got a lot of problems, right? You know, Trump's vulnerability is not merely what is revealed about his past or his actions or his current actions. His vulnerability also is if he is a very unpopular president and if he's doing things that people don't particularly like, if the economy were to slow down significantly, there's a lot of blowback that comes from those circumstances. And people in a circumstance like that, they look for someone to blame not merely for the alleged wrongdoing as regards the individual, but for all sorts of other problems. And a president can end up in a really bad circumstance. Nixon in 74.
It's a great example of that. All right, we got to wrap it up. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at slysoffice.com. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, John.
Look forward to it, bro.
Should be interesting.
It cannot help but get more interesting.